You're listening to Homicide Worldwide. Your hosts, Sally and Keto, would like to remind our listeners, the episodes deal with crimes that are graphic in nature and may not be suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Again for joining us here tonight at Homicide Worldwide Podcast. A quick shout out to all the folks who are supporting us by listening every week. We are so grateful to you all. Sally and I would like to open it up to you all out there. If there is a case that you would like to hear us talk about, please email suggestions to homicideworldwidepodcast@gmail.com. Please follow us on social media, on Instagram and Twitter at Homicide Worldwide Podcast. And finally, please keep telling your friends about us because it really helps our show. We hope you enjoy it this evening, and we'll see you back next week. Consenting adults have the privilege to decide what they are willing and not willing to do in the privacy of their own room. Be it a foot fetish, S&M, or whatever philia suits a person best, we are not here to judge, but merely to try to understand. Tonight's million-dollar question that begs for an answer is this. What happens when a man's fantasy turns into a reality and he meets the exact right, committed, and willing partner? Who can really say that this consensual crime of cannibalism was really murder? Could it have just been that there really is somebody for everybody? Perhaps this was simply a means to an end for both people, something that was deeply satiating a dark fantasy that each person shared. In early 2001, this is exactly what happened. Tonight we are going to discuss Armin Mivus, who is also known as the Cannibal of Rottenburg, or Der Metzgermeister, the Master Butcher. He met Bernd Brandes at a little place around the corner called the Cannibal Cafe. These two hooked up in an online forum long before you could swipe left or right for people with like interests and desires. It just so happened that one of them wanted to be eaten and the other wanted to do the eating. So tonight, if you happen to be swiping left or right, grab yourself a nice South African red and settle in. This is episode 16 of Homicide Worldwide. Joining us at Homicide Worldwide. Hello, Sally. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am grand. Thank you very much.
This is going to be so fun. What is it about a cannibal that just... I am looking forward to this one. Did you go into many different rabbit holes with this?
About a million.
Yeah, I had to be very decisive about what to include and what not to include, because quite honestly, there's just like, who would have known that there are so many different ways to look at this?
It really is fascinating. I just, it's not something that I can say that I understand. I found this to be incredibly interesting. People may disagree with this. People may be really excited about this, but I also found myself weirdly feeling like this guy wasn't that bad of a guy.
I had the same feeling.
Isn't that terrible?
It's hard to know where it would have gone for him if he hadn't been arrested.
For sure. You know,
he did one crime and he was kind of on the lookout to do a second one when he got caught. You know, crime, again, we're going to get into what this was. This a crime? The law says, yeah.
Ish. There's a little ishy at the end of that.
It was quite ishy. And I had a lot of different reactions to this one. I'm a big fan of what you do with another consenting adult is completely up to you.
Yes.
That's kind of my jam on all versions of sexuality. It's like, is the other person consenting even up and to having their life ended? If that is what they desperately want, if that is literally the fulfillment of their lifelong fantasies, if that it will bring them the most fulfillment, knowing that they're dying in this way, like, anyway, it's hard to know where you should stop and where the state can step in and what the state says you can and cannot do with your own body. It's pretty fascinating.
It is. It really is. It's kind of a struggle that has been around for a while, maybe not necessarily for this, but I mean, and not to get too far into Dr. Kevorkian, but it's in line with that same mentality. It should be up to the person. And so, although that didn't involve sex, but it is interesting in the sense of these were two consenting adults. There was much evidence pointing it was consensual for both people. So I have a hard time calling the victim the victim.
A victim. I also blanched at that a few times.
Yeah.
Let's go and start out with a little bit of Armin Mivas. Can I also say that the most disturbing thing for me about Armin Mivas is his teeth?
Yes.
He's got a big smile. So, you know, some people, when they smile, their lips kind of pull back. It exposes all of the teeth on the side as well. So you can, it's just a lot of chompers. And when I look at his teeth, I just imagine them chomping. And so when he smiles, I don't find it a very reassuring thing. So let's talk about Armin Mivas. Armin was born December the 1st, 1961, to Waltraud and Dieter. He was the third and youngest son of Waltraud, and Dieter was actually his father, but not the father of Waltraud's other two sons, the older boys, who actually were quite a bit older than Armin. And from what I can tell, there were many instances in Armin's early life that really had an element of abandonment to them. So his mom was super overbearing, really overbearing. And that got worse as she got older. The father, Dieter, actually walked out after an argument with Waltraud one day. He literally walks out the front door, gets in his car, drives away, doesn't look in the rearview mirror. And Armin is like running after the car trying to stop him, and he doesn't look back.
Yeah.
And this is a very, very, very traumatic experience for Armin. And this comes after his older brothers have already left the nest, which I gather was not a very happy nest. So they were probably very glad to leave. Yeah. So the brothers left, then Dieter, the father, just up and goes. And he is never part of Armin's life again.
Yeah, he just sort of vaporized and didn't.
Just vaporized.
There was nothing about him when I was looking. Everything looped back to Armin. It was just literally like he was like a ghost.
And early in Armin's life, his parents had actually moved into this really amazing old German manor house.
Did you hear how old that house was? When you say old, I had read several things that said that it was like centuries old.
Holy crap.
Centuries, like really, 7 centuries old.
Holy cannoli.
Like really fucking old.
Like older than dirt. There's a really fun name for that style of house in Germany with a white background with the brown sort of boards and crosses around the windows.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it in German.
Oh, please.
Fuckwerk. Welcome. Fuckwerk. I said that accurately. That's how you say it.
I don't think anybody will argue that. Certainly not myself.
But it's this beautiful but vast house. 40 rooms.
40 rooms.
So he's basically, when you said kind of like a ghost earlier when you said about his dad, but something about his life with his mom, who becomes quite bitter and increasingly overbearing and kind of makes Armin do all this shit for her, all her errands and all these jobs he has to do. But he stays and he looks after her, even though everyone else has just left. The brothers have gone. So his childhood is kind of defined by people leaving. And so a pathology that includes trying to make people stay forever makes sense.
Yes. It does.
In this environment. So kind of put a pin in that, as Rachel Maddow would say, and just we'll come back to that idea of wanting to make people stay with you forever.
It was intense for him as a young boy growing up too, because in line with that, long before he ended up becoming what he ultimately became, he had invented an imaginary friend because he really, really, really wanted specifically a younger brother, not just a younger sibling, but he wanted a younger brother and somebody who he could kind of nurture and care for and sort of just be on the lookout for. And I guess almost have somebody who needed him.
Yes, somebody who needed to be with him, who would not leave him.
Right.
Because they needed to be with him.
That's when you just get a puppy.
Get a fucking puppy. Or a low investment ant farm. Goes well, hamster. If that goes well, puppy.
Yeah, that's true. I guess you do need to work up to it.
It's good really badly. There were two interesting pop cultural influences on him that I've came across that really kind of color a lot of his development into the cannibal aspect. One was the childhood obsession with Hansel and Gretel.
Oh, yes.
I had forgotten details of Hansel and Gretel because everyone focuses on the witch and the gingerbread house and the, you know, fattening up the little kids to eat them, right? They focus on that part, but there's this whole part at the start of Hansel and Gretel where the father of the children is the biological father, and then the mother is actually the stepmother, and she's like, these kids suck, they're eating us out of house and home, we don't even have a piece of bread.
Yeah,
listen, husband, you have to take these kids, you have to take them out, and you have to leave them in the forest.
Yep.
And so the children hear this and they put stones in their pockets, and then they go out, and because they leave stones all the way into the forest, they find their way back, and then they bang on the door, and the parents are like, this really has to happen the next time. The dad really doesn't want to do it, but of course it's an evil stepmother, right? So there's this whole aspect around deliberate abandonment. There's this whole story that's a sort of subplot of Hansel and Gretel. And so he was obsessed with this story, even, and I believe from my reading that the father actually came and did some testifying in court and mentioned his childhood obsession with Hansel and Gretel. And of course, there's the whole fattening up of the child to be eaten by the witch.
Right. It's so weird that you brought up that version of Hansel and Gretel because I just reread it and had forgotten a lot about it. I mean, it's been a million years.
That's so weird.
And yeah, you're right. Like, yeah, everybody does focus always on the witch and doesn't ever focus on the fact that the parents were actually trying to kill the kids.
Trying to deliberately abandon their children.
Putting them in the middle of the forest to starve to death.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, I was, when I was thinking about Hansel and Gretel, I had honestly forgotten about that aspect of the story. And when I read it again and noted how prominent the abandonment aspect was, then I could see how that would have fed into how traumatic it was for him. I mean, it's traumatic for any child to be abandoned, but if it's already a heightened awareness in your life as a result of this kind of obsession. So that was one of the main influences. The other one, which Mivas himself mentions in interviews when he casts his mind back to his childhood, is that he was really obsessed with the character of Sandy Ricks from Flipper. The show kind of operates over the time when the actor who plays him transitions from kind of a maybe 10 or 11 year old to like a 14, 15 year old. It's like you can see him change. And he is this like pinnacle of strapping American boyhood. He is tall, he is tan, he gets around in a lot of short shorts, golden haired, handsome, and this was a very iconic sort of fantasy fodder for Armin Mivas. And so these two things, Hansel and Gretel, kind of the story of a child, you know, eating, there's eating cannibalism involved, and Sandy from Flipper, kind of, it sounds so funny, but it's like he kind of channeled a lot of his fantasies through these lenses. And then as he got friends, as he got a little older, you know, in 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, kind of that very early sexual awakening time, his friends became the sort of increasing focus of his fantasies. And cannibalism and the idea of eating them to keep them close to you forever, it started to come to his mind that nobody needed to abandon him ever again. Nobody needed to leave him. Nobody could leave him. If they were part of him, they could never leave.
Yeah, it was like he would absorb them.
Yeah, be there in his body. And it's got a weird kind of screwed up logic to it.
I had read that those thoughts started for him as young as 8. He was very young when this all started to happen. You know, of course, like when you research these things, there's always a little bit of span of time, you know, but 8 to 10 was kind of what I had found. Yeah, I mean, I read it a couple of times that it was around that age that he was starting to really think about this and the fantasy of eating another human being. He was starting to, you know, think about that.
Something about eating, you know, when you eat, you make the food into yourself.
Right.
And
like you devour the other person, you almost get like their power and like absorb their soul in a way, I suppose, if you eat them. You know, it's interesting as a side note, which I don't want to get too far into, but Jeffrey Dahmer had that same mentality of he wanted to keep them with him. And there's something very interesting about the mentality of keeping the person with you in that way. You literally are like the harborer of the soul of that person.
Like their energy, like their life energy that went into making their flesh is now a part of your flesh.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Kind of intense.
It's extremely intense.
It's also kind of sad. You know, it's like one of the things that Armin Maiva said about himself is that he was extremely lonely as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you get to a point where in your development, you have a very intensely negative experience, you have to expect the brain to kind of go off in strange directions to kind of heal itself or to heal the hurt or protect against further hurt. So these are the kind of things that have really kind of fueled his rich fantasy life around really very focused on young boys and young men, sort of this very sort of early pinnacle, healthy young manhood kind of age, which he himself was nearing. And he got older, he learned how to do computer technical stuff, he became a computer technician. When he was 38 years old in 1999, I know we jumped over a big space there, but nothing really happened for him in terms of any criminal activity in that time. In 1999, his mother dies, and he's been kind of caring for her for a long time as her death approached. And she had not gotten any easier to live with. She was very bitter over the husband leaving, very bitter over how that affected her life. And I'm sure we know she was not kind to him and criticized the crap out of him. That can't have been fun. So anyway, 1999, Waltraud dies. And now Armin is by himself. He has no restraints on his behavior. He has some money. He has this house that's kind of gigantic away from other houses. He also, even though his mother has been awful to him, he wants to keep her around. He builds a shrine to her in his house. He even gets a plastic mannequin and dresses it in her clothes and lays it in her bed at night. This is, again, Armin Maivis trying to hang on to people who have left him and trying to find ways to keep them with him. So there's lots of little elements where you can see that pathology about keep you with me. I don't want to lose you. Even people who are awful to him, like his mother was.
Yeah.
It's a big part of his worldview.
It reminded me a lot of Psycho and Norman Bates.
Oh, Lord, yeah. I had flashbacks.
To me, it was so reminiscent of that keeping the mom around, and not her actual body, but just that relationship and that connection and just how that omnipresence of his mother. That was one of the first things I thought of. I was like, oh, my God, this is a little Norman Batesy.
And I mean that he must have had a strong attachment to his mother to want to keep her around, even though by all accounts, she wasn't the easiest person to be around. I think that, again, speaks to his deep loneliness and desire to have connections in his life. But he often talked about later how he couldn't quite do it. He couldn't quite get how people made connections.
Yeah.
Something that was really difficult for him to do that. So even though he craved connection with other people, it was very difficult for him to have sort of close, intense relationships. But people said he was a nice guy.
That was the thing. People really thought that he was a nice person. He was described repeatedly as being a very nice person, a pleasant person, a good neighbor. People enjoyed being around him.
He mowed his lawn for his neighbors.
Yes, he did.
He like helped them fix their cars and stuff. I would love him as a neighbor, to be perfectly frank.
Wouldn't it be nice? At one point, though, he went into the military. He went into the German service. From what it sounds like, he did very well. It was like he had this distraction. There wasn't time throughout the day to really nurture these types of fantasies. And so for a while, he did very, very well with that.
And it's very purposeful work. You have tasks that you have to accomplish and goals that you have to meet.
Right.
Like you said, I imagine that it sort of maybe filled a gap for him. I can imagine him feeling like he belonged.
Yeah, the camaraderie. And it was kind of something that he'd been searching for in the sense of not wanting to be alone because he'd been lonely and feeling abandoned his whole life.
So it was a good stint in the military for Armin, and he kind of felt like he had his place. When he finished his service, he came out, he started his work in computer software engineering, computers, if you will. Then with the birth of the internet, because this is kind of the early-ish days of the internet, yeah. It was still the Wild West. It was a time when, and it still is a time quite obviously, I mean, it was especially back then a time where whatever little fetish or paraphilia or nasty little desire that you had, you could find somebody out there who could scratch your itch. There was one prosecutor in this case who said this could not have happened without the internet.
Definitely not.
This is a way you can open yourself to the world. You can find whoever you want. There's absolutely a person in the world for you. You just have to find them.
Yeah.
And so he started to kind of get interested in pornography. He started to really look into especially stuff about torture and pain. And he was in a lot of chat rooms. Chat rooms were the thing. And it really led him to cannibalism. I mean, that was kind of a sort of darker desire for him. And eventually he found the chat rooms where people were having conversations about what really stoked his fire,
yeah.
Which was the idea of eating another person and kind of keeping them with you forever.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, and just stumbling upon a community of, it's such a taboo.
You can imagine the relief of just being able to talk about it openly.
Like,
must
oh my God, nervous. Finally I've met my people, you know, and you know, that could be why he never really quite found who he fit in with before, because he didn't really fit in with any one community like this. And so he, when he found this, he was free to suddenly just be who he was. It was almost like a welcome, you know, welcome to cannibalism. Everybody here is into it.
Yep.
You know, are you the one who's going to eat me or am I going to eat you? Like, what's the, you know, who are you in this little game? And so he stumbles upon the Cannibal Cafe, which is, it's no longer in operation. I think you could probably poke around and find it pretty easily, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, so 2000, he has gotten pretty involved in this online community, and he sent out over 60 ads.
Yeah.
And they all kind of are saying the same thing. Looking for a young, well-built man, 18 to 30 years, to slaughter.
It doesn't get more direct than that.
I mean, to the point, right? You have to admire the directness.
You know what you're signing up for if you
right?
click yes.
Click yes, swipe right. So he finally gets a response. He actually gets a lot of responses, to be
yes.
honest. A lot of responses come in, over 200. And it takes him a while, it takes him a couple of months. He's a cautious man. You have to admire this about him. He slowly starts to weed through the ones who are kind of like, when the knife comes out, they would be like, actually, you know what to do?
Oh, this is real?
Yeah. Oh, you're actually going to do it. So there were people who he didn't even have to meet them. He could just tell that they weren't going to be into it. Finally, one guy named Borg Jose answers and says, this, I am absolutely into this. I am ready, I'm ready to commit. And they get to the point where Borg is laid out on a table. Now, at this point, Armin, in his fuckwerk house, has made essentially a kill room. He's kind of soundproofed it. There's a table with restraints. There's like equipment for butchering. He's done a lot of research on butchering. He understands how to butcher. He's like gotten some skills.
Yeah, he's educated himself. He wasn't just randomly sawing your arm off. He knew what he was doing.
No, certainly not. Yeah, he's got a little bit of a plan.
Yeah.
When Borg is actually laid out on the table, and then he's like, I feel really sick. I don't think I want to do this. And Mythos lets him go. Because this is not about murder.
It's not about murder.
No, it's not about the taking of a life. Although it involves the taking of a life. It's not about the taking of a life.
Correct.
There's a very important distinction there. Borg got out by the skin of his teeth. He absolutely noped out of that. But it showed that this was a possible thing.
Yeah.
That he just needed to find the right person. So he kept at it.
Yes. And actually, I think a couple of people, they didn't necessarily get quite as far as Borg did. They definitely were on board. There is a very large group of people who are very open to this. And it is 100% consensual. And so I guess being that it's consensual, and how, you know, you were saying that it wasn't necessarily about murder, that's not where the satisfaction was going to come in. For him, he wanted to consume the person, not necessarily because he wanted to kill the person.
That's right. The act of consumption was the satisfying part.
Correct.
And it just happened to be that
you can't get there without the kill.
Yeah. It's like if you eat a chicken, the chicken's not voluntarily giving up its thigh to you and it's not going to be okay afterward. There is a name for the erotic desire to be eaten or to eat someone. And it's vorarophilia. This is a whole interesting thing. There's a subculture. Huh? Vorarophiles categorize themselves as prey, predator, or observer.
Yeah.
And that depends on where you get off. So if you get off on the idea of somebody eating you, and people do, it takes all kinds to make a world. So you can be prey. You can be the one who wants to be eaten. The predator, obviously the one who wants to do the eating, or an observer. If you get off on watching the idea of watching somebody eat another person, there's a subculture. There's soft vor. They call themselves vors, which is short for vorarophile. Soft vor, like softcore. It's cute. Mm. Soft vor relates to swallowing or being swallowed whole. So the idea of just being like totally consumed and taken over. And then hard vor, it fetishizes this idea of a little bit more of the tearing, ripping, dismembering. It's not a neat whole swallow whole. It's about being taken apart.
It's like a snake versus a T-Rex. I'm not into the feeding of snakes, but I do like them.
So to be clear, vorarophilias are not necessarily cannibals. Because it is a fantasy.
Right.
And the thing about fantasy that we all know, you could do whatever you want in the privacy of your own mind. And once it comes out into the world, obviously it's not a fantasy anymore. And 99.99% of the people who identify as having vorarophilia likely have no intention of trying to cross over into the real world. It's something that just lights their fire. And they explore it on the mental, emotional level, but they don't explore it on the physical level.
Yeah, it just lives somewhere in the mind.
That's right. So finally, Arnon gets a response, the response that he's been looking for. He gets a response to his ad. He wants this, you know, a young man to eat. Basically,
please be well built, by the way.
It has to be well built. I mean, you're not going to eat poor quality meat, are you? It's going to be all fatty otherwise.
That's right.
He starts getting these responses from a man named Bernd Brandis. And Bernd has his own little paraphilia about being eaten. So you can definitely make the argument that he is a vorarophiliac. He doesn't just want to be eaten. He wants specifically to have his penis bitten off. A strong part of his fantasy is to have his penis bitten off. And I'm sorry to the gentleman in the audience. If you think that that's bad, I suggest just holding onto your junk for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, it's not going to get any better.
Very real. So Bernd also has this fantasy about being consumed. And it's a suicidal ideation for sure.
Absolutely.
But it's not just suicidal. It's about obliteration. there's something about being eaten where you are obliterated. And this was really important to him.
It was. There isn't a ton out there about him.
I was so curious about him and his childhood and how he got this way. It is the Armin show from start
to
finish.
It is, except for there are a couple of little things that I was able to uncover. So he had a really strained relationship with his father. And he, right, who would have guessed that? He was also left by his mother at a very young age when she committed suicide.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah, he was about 5 or 6 when that happened. After that, like, the relationship between he and his father was always really pretty strained. Like, he was sort of just that person who, like, floats through the world, goes through the emotions, but isn't really in the life, if that makes sense. And so, but I guess he was a very reliable type of person. He was a really reliable worker, and he, for a very long time, had a girlfriend. And when they broke up, it was about 3 or 4 months that he had been single when he kind of started looking for a new relationship. And at this time, he was still trying to date women, but there was like that underlying homosexuality that he hadn't really come to terms with yet. So he's, you know, out there and he's still trying to find these women and nothing's really working out. And I guess like he had gained some weight and he ended up with a little bit of a pot belly and started working out a lot, ended up with like, you know, a washboard ab type of situation. And then, so he starts kind of losing his hair and does the exact thing that a man who is losing his hair should do, and he shaves his head. So he kind of is like morphing, right? Like physically, and he's not really finding his mate with a woman. And so then he meets this guy who is like 10 years younger than he was. He starts a relationship with him, and that's who he was with when he met Armin. But before he met Armin, he had kind of dabbled. This is in Berlin, and it sounds like it's a real party town.
And so Berlin is a huge
It seems
party
like
town.
It'd be really fun to go to. And so I guess it's a pretty big gay scene in Berlin. So he had visited a few male prostitutes who he had given that same request to bite off his penis. This was something that he was, this wasn't like a, you know what? I'm going to go online today, tap, tap, roo, or as you say, typey, typey, go online and try and find some guy to bite off my dick. Like, he had been thinking about this for a good long time. This is not something that was new to him. It was not something that he hadn't given a lot of thought to. And of course, as we know, because Armin was the one who did it, nobody had gotten into it. Everybody was kind of like, what the fuck? No, I'm not doing that to you. Like, what are you talking about? And so it never happened for him. And so this was something that was just like, it was almost like consuming him in a way to the point where he just wanted it done. He just wanted it done.
It's insane. It's just insane to think about. I mean, I remember reading that the current boyfriend that he had offered him like 10,000 Deutschmarks to bite off his penis.
Yeah.
And the boyfriend said later during the trial that, because he was called to testify, he said that when they were having sex together, if he put his mouth on his, you know, boyfriend's penis, as you expect that you would do, and he would put his teeth around it, that that was like the go-to move for Bernd. That was like the best thing that could happen, and he was like guaranteed orgasm like as soon as that happened. Like the teeth, the feeling of the teeth like squeezing down on his penis.
God.
Like it was a very, very strong sexual connection there, but also this very strong emotional need that he had. It became an obsession.
It really did. And so when he met Armin, they had made their arrangement ahead of time. And I think you have a little something about that, don't you?
God. So I actually have an exchange, an online exchange between them. And I'm going to read it so that you can hear which one is Armin and which one is Bernd. So I'll read it in kind of two different voices. So online on the Cannibal Cafe forum, Bernd had the name Cator, C-A-T-O-R, Cator 99. And Armin had the name Antrophagus, which means, from what I can tell, people eater. It's cute. So, but I'm not going to use those names. I'm going to start out by saying who's who, and you'll be able to tell. So we're going to start out with Bernd. This is Bernd, and he says, hello. Literally, that's what it says. So I'm going to read it. It's H-A-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-O-O-O-O-O-O-O, question mark.
Wow.
So that's how it goes. Hello. Hi, Cator. What do you do professionally that you're up so late at night? That's Armin. Here's Bernd again. I can't sleep well anymore because of our meeting. Well, that's a sensible reason. Yesterday, I was incredibly tired. It was a stressful day. I'm in telecommunications. Here's Armin again. Oh, that sounds interesting. I believe you. Armin, I'm looking forward to our meeting. It will definitely be really cool. Here's Bernd. I want it to be. I hope it'll be really cool. Are you setting an alarm clock? Armin, it's only a few days until March 9th. Here's Bernd. Still, I would have rather met you yesterday and felt your teeth. Armin, one can't have everything. There's still some time before you really feel my teeth. Bernd, I hardly know what to expect. Have you slaughtered a man before? Armin, unfortunately, only in my dreams, but in my thoughts, I do it every night. Bernd, so I'm the first? You have eaten human flesh before, or you haven't? Armin, no, you don't exactly find it in the supermarket, unfortunately. Bernd, I love that part. Bernd, how do you know if it will taste good to you or that the blood won't make you sick? Armin, I'm readying myself with my dreams. Once I was so excited, I grabbed a needle and drew my own blood so I could drink it. Bernd, and your blood, it tasted good to you? Armin, it was quite tasty. Once I was drilling some holes and the drill slipped right into my hand, that was a real treat. Blood is the juice of life. It contains everything a person needs for nutrition. Bernd, then I hope you won't wilt, that you can really see it through without a problem. Armin, to bite into your penis will certainly not be easy. Living flesh is somewhat more resistant than fried. But one thing is certain, our dream will be fulfilled. Bernd, but there's not so much in it as there is in muscle. Armin, yes, but the penis is principally a spongy material filled with blood. For both our sakes, I hope that's true. I hope you have also already thought about what's to be done with the rest. Fulfilling the dream shouldn't become a nightmare for you. No one will know where I've disappeared to. Armin, after you're dead, I'll take you out and expertly carve you up. Except for a pair of knees and some fleshy trash, skin, cartilage, tendons, there won't be much of you left. Bernd, there will be a good bit, like the knees. I hope you have a good hiding place for them. Armin, I'll dry out the knees and grind them up soon after. Bernd, okay, they're good as fertilizer. I heard that once. I see you've thought about it. Good. Sounds like I'm the first. Armin, and you won't be the last, hopefully. I've already considered catching a young person from the street, but I would rather kill only those who want to be killed. That also doesn't sound bad, but yeah, seeing as it's not so totally legal, this is, in my eyes, better than yanking somebody directly off the street. And lastly, Armin. Exactly. I'd do it, if it were legal.
Holy shit.
Yeah, they're pretty direct, aren't they?
That's quite an exchange,
It's quite
Sally.
An exchange, isn't it? I know, when I read that, I was like, they are just getting down to business. Like, you know what? Your kneecaps or skin, we're going to grind those up, make a little powder. It's maybe a little fertilizer.
When you're dead, don't worry. There won't be much of you left. Oh, yeah, how reassuring. I was so concerned.
I know. I was super worried about that. Like God, you really put my mind at rest. Let's do it.
That pretty much outlines exactly what's about to go down, but not quite, though.
No. There's a few more stuff.
There's a few more little things that go on. This was just a couple of days before March 9th, right? So when they finally do meet up, because this had been an online thing and very clearly a conversation that had happened between the two of them, where each person really seemed to know what their position was in this game, Bernd was very clear on that he was to not just get his penis bitten off, but that that was going to be the day he was going to die. He was extremely clear on that. Like, the clarity couldn't have been more.
And right. He financially committed to this. He like sold his shit.
Right.
He was ready to be done.
Yeah. And he had also arranged at work, because like I had said before, he was known to be really reliable. He arranged the day off of work. He had told his boyfriend that he was going on an out of town business trip. And he boarded the train and left.
A one-way ticket?
Yeah, and he left. And so he had made his own arrangements. This is where I had said I have a hard time calling him a victim, because he was such a willing participant in this and wanted this so, so badly. And so he also went as far as kind of clearing out his computer to not have any trace of where he was headed to. Like, he had Armin's back on this. You know, he was, you know, I don't want any trace of me. I want to just disappear and go to this guy's house and be eaten and never found.
Obliteration, I'm telling you.
Yeah, and so
just like everything gone.
It was almost like this was just like he was finally realizing this fantasy that he had had for so long, and he was like relieved. He was almost happy to be done. So they meet up, he gets picked up, and they go back to Armin's house. It had been all kind of prepared and ready to go, but apparently when they got there, weren't disrobed, because this is according to Armin, that he wanted Armin to have a good look at his meal. And so apparently they both got naked. And at this point, they indulged themselves in some coffee in the nude, which, I mean, you know. And so at some point, they had sex. And so Armin said that Bernd felt that he wasn't doing it right. And so he was kind of like, you know, I guess he was not in this act as violent as maybe Bernd would have liked. And so after this is all said and done, at some point after this, I don't know how long, I don't know if there was some pillow talk afterwards or if, you know, if there was some other discussion about what was to follow, Armin actually almost seemed a little tentative about the act itself. Like, even though this was his fantasy, he kind of was almost like, oh my God, I finally have somebody who's willing to do this. Like, am I able to deliver? And so he kind of got cold feet. And so at this point, Bernd was like, just take me back to the train station. This isn't happening. And I can see that we've made a mistake here. On the way back, Bernd was really like, you know, I wish that this had happened. And Armin at this point had said that he was really like, he could give it another try. And so on the way back, they stopped to get this for Bernd, cold medication or cough syrup, mm-hmm. and some kind of sleeping pill, which he took a ton of, way more than what you're supposed to take. Mm-hmm. And so he took all of this, and then they end up going back to Armin's house where all of this ends up happening. Armin does attempt to bite off his penis, but it doesn't go well because, like, remember the teeth that we were talking about in the beginning? Like, those front teeth are not sharp. Like, those are not made for that. Like, and his are kind of like, they look like weird little Scrabble chips to me.
They do. They look like little baby teeth.
Yeah, they're not sharp. So I'm like, that's how awful. And then they attempt, I don't know where the thinking came in with this, but apparently they tried a knife that was described, I don't know if it was, but it was described as a butter knife. Like, I would have gone for the sharp knife myself, like, just to be expeditious about this. I mean, why go for the butter knife when you've got the sharp knife there as well? And so anyhow, it doesn't work the first time with the butter knife or the teeth, but it does work like a charm on the third try with the sharp knife. I've heard a couple of different ways that this happened. I've heard that it was done while he was seated. I've heard that it was done while he was, like, it was on a table.
He put his wang on a table and said, chop.
Yeah. I've heard a couple of...
Do it now.
Uh-huh. They're like, so they finally detach the penis. This is, in fact, finally the detachable penis.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, so they...
And there's a gout of blood.
Of course, because, I mean, think about it. There are so... Think about it if you cut your finger, okay? Like,
right.
This is something that's vascular.
Yes, highly vascular.
And obviously, in order for it to function, it needs to have adequate blood flow. And so, of course, it's going to have a shit ton of blood. And it starts bleeding a lot because it's gone. It's off the body. And so they try to eat it. They try to eat it as it is, just raw. Bernd really wanted to be part of this particular act. He really wanted to eat this part of his body himself. Like, he wanted, for whatever reason, he really wanted to be involved in that. But I wasn't surprised by this, but it was said that it's a very chewy, almost calamari-ish, like really bad calamari.
Super bad
texture. And that it was very tough and chewy and inedible. And so...
And if you've ever been around a penis, you'll know that Like, balls are very, 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 very delicate things, but a penis can really take a smacking around. It is a tough part of the body, and it can take a smack. Although a penis might seem like a delicate thing, it actually is kind of a workhorse.
Who told you this, Allie?
Oh, I just came up with that out of my own brain. My vast penis experience, too.
Her own penis experience.
Yeah, so much penis experience. Oh, my God.
So
very hard to chew that penis.
It was. It was so difficult that they decided that it might be best to cook the penis on the stove in a pan, which... it wasn't a piece of chicken that you can just, like, throw a little white wine and some garlic and some, you know, little bits of spices and whatnot into. And that's what he tried to do, though. And I guess when he did this, kind of shrank it.
Like, it just, I can imagine, it's a very spongy thing. As soon as it hit the pan, I can imagine, this, like, it's not a piece of muscle. This is right. An absolutely disgusting podcast.
It's so gross.
It's not like a piece of, it's not like muscle. Like when we think about meat that you know, if you're a meat eater and you fry a steak or you fry, it's a completely different kind of tissue.
Oh,
it's
for sure.
Spongy. It's meant to fill up with blood. So it's got a lot of holes in it. So when it hits the frying pan, it just goes.
Did it dissolve?
Dissolve.
Yeah.
Also, can I just say,
please,
this is insanely amateurish behavior from Armin. He has literally spent his life.
I've had that same thought.
And really, you're going to use like a braise. You need to braise it. Why would you try to saute it? It just doesn't make any sense. I'm a shitty cook. Even I know that you would not try to. I was like, come on. That is such a. It's just amateur hour in the kitchen right now at Armin's house.
It really was. I mean, and so. This whole thing does not work. I can imagine at this point, like, Armin's probably, like, kind of shitting his pants a little bit, going like, you know what? Like, I fucked up. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry about your dick. He ruins the penis in the pan. It does not work. It does not fry well. It does not cook well. He does try to give it the old college try one more time. They try to eat it. At this point, it is just not happening. And so then apparently just gives it to the dog. What was left of it.
Dog's like, I'll eat that wing.
I don't care what the texture's like. It's cool. Exactly. So this was it. But of course, at this point, you know, however long this took, Bert was not dead. He managed to survive. But at this point, because he's had a massive loss of blood, he is now cold. And so Armin then decides, well, I'll draw you a warm bath. And so he does just that, and Bert gets in the tub and lays there. So Armin, at this point, he knows that Bert's still alive, but he just goes and kicks it and reads a Star Trek book. Like,
the Star Trek was such an interesting choice to me.
So interesting. Like, what book was it? Which one?
I know. I want to know.
I really wanted to know, too. I kept thinking The Wrath of Khan, but I don't know.
I like that movie.
It was a good movie. Yeah. So anyhow, at this point, Bert's in the tub for an extended period of time. And
many hours, we're talking.
It was hours. Like up to three is the most consistent thing that I've read, was that it was up to 3 hours that he was in there. So I don't know if it was like, I know Armin was going and checking on him at like these different kind of intervals just to make sure, like, I mean, are you
between Star Trek chapters?
He's like, dog ears the page and moves, slowly sets it down and makes his way to the bathroom. But Bert's like not dying. He also, this part, I couldn't believe that given the amount of cough syrup that he had taken and the amount of sleeping aid that he had taken, he somehow did not slip into the water and drown. Like, how did that not happen for him? Like, he just laid there in his, like, slowly bleeding out, dying. And so Armin then stabs him in the neck to end his suffering. But this was something that Armin did not out of being vicious or because he wanted to be a murderer, but because he wanted to... he kind of prayed over it. He sort of was like trying to find his strength with what he had to do next, which was to end Burnt's life. And his incredible suffering.
His dick has just been cut off.
Yeah, and he just bled out everywhere. After he's, you know, done the stabbing, he cleans and prepares the body. All of this has been videotaped. Armin set up a video camera with Burnt's consent, and the entire act from beginning to end was captured on video.
From the first shot?
From the very first, I assume, nude coffee drinking all the way through being stabbed in the neck with a knife.
Gnarly. There's a quote from Armin about the very last moments of Burnt's life, and he says, "My friend enjoyed dying and death. I only waited horrified for the end after doing the deed. It took so terribly long." I really feel the regret there.
I did too. I felt that he was remorseful about the act of killing.
That it was a sort of necessary evil.
Yeah. But even though he had a slaughter room in the house, like, there was, like, preparation. It was almost like once it was there and it was happening, it was, like, too much. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like maybe that would have been just better to keep that as a fantasy in the back of your head somewhere and just don't let that one out there, Armin.
Oh, dear. But then the chopping begins. He's finally got the body that he has been wanting. And he is a pro when it comes to prepping this body. So he takes Burnt Brandis's body, he hangs it on a meat hook, he cuts the flesh into convenient freezing portions, he grinds the bones into flour.
Yeah, he pulverized the bones.
I don't know if he ever made, did he ever bake? I don't know if he just used it, just that was his way of disposing of it, or did he...
I know Burnt's boyfriend was a baker.
Oh, dear. Did he go full Leonardo?
Tea cakes and...
Yummy!
Delicious.
So he's got this dismembered body that he then freezes, and he stores the parts in his freezer. He labels them, because he's a fastidious kind of dude. And he proceeds to eat Burnt over a period of 10 months.
The amount of Burnt that he ate was
44 pounds.
That is
a lot of Burnt.
So much human meat.
You can eat the internal organs, but you can't eat them all. So there's some weight there.
Skeletons, liver.
Of course. I mean, just go to the classics at that point. You can get a Chianti, but you can have the liver. I guess you would be looking for like flank and back and buttocks and the large parts. He ended up disposing of Burnt's head in his backyard. He dug a hole and he got rid of it there. Then he just ate a lot of Burnt.
A lot. I mean, 44 pounds. I mean, Jesus.
A lot of Burnt.
That's a lot. I mean, that's many, many portions throughout the week. If you, 52 weeks in a year, right? Like, that's a lot. That's a lot of Burnt. Yeah,
but he describes eating him. He says, "The first bite was, of course, very strange. It was a feeling I can't really describe. I spent over 40 years longing for it, dreaming about it. Now I was getting the feeling that I was actually achieving this perfect connection through his flesh."
He also described it as tasting like pork.
I can imagine it would.
And he also said that he didn't think that the average person, had they not known what they were eating, would tell the difference.
I believe that that's true.
I believe that that's totally true. Thank God he didn't say it tasted like chicken.
Oh God, wouldn't that have been disappointing? So Armin slowly kind of eats down his stash. And as is the way when you fulfill a fantasy, once you fulfill it, you realize that it needs more.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do more if you want to continue to have that feeling. This is kind of how he gets caught.
Yes.
He goes back onto the message boards and he starts cruising for another willing victim. But he makes a mistake of saying something like, and you won't be the first, mm-hmm. you won't be my first. And that gets the attention of this young dude who's like an Austrian student, I think. And he sees this and it just really catches his eye, this idea that like it's happened, he's done this before. So he reports it to the police and the police look into it and they start to take this very seriously. And so the police turn up at Armin's house and they search his house and they find the freezer and they find what's left of Bert.
Yes.
And almost instantly, Armin, being a very reasonable person, confesses and describes what he did, and yeah. he is arrested.
Because they asked him, did you eat human flesh? Mm-hmm. And his response was, I may have.
Really a yes or no answer at that point. You can't really hedge. I'm not really sure.
I mean, is that human in my freezer? Or okay, so this was like a year later, though. So Bert yes. had been missing from his own life, and people were really looking for him. His boyfriend was actually really distraught. He filed a missing persons report. And of course, everything turned up dry, right? You know, because all the things that Bert had done in preparation for his disappearance and ultimate demise, he had done himself. And so he put all those checks and balances in together, and he had tried to make it so that he would not be traced back to Armin, which he wasn't traced back to Armin. It was this new kid on this message board mm-hmm. is what led them back. And then they started putting two and two together and they were like, oh, we think we found Bert in your freezer. Armin also did use Bert's foot for decoration for a while.
Oh, that's just not cool. I think it should be noted when Armin ate Bernd, he enjoyed him with a South African red wine. He had got out his best cutlery and his mother's best linens, table linens. He set the table with candles. He made it something very, very special.
It was very ritualistic.
And almost respectful yeah. in a weird way. And he talked about this idea of, as he was eating parts of burnt Brandis over the next few weeks and months, he said, with every bite, my memory of him grew stronger. And he also talked about how it was almost this mystical effect that he felt, where burnt, for example, spoke English quite well. Armin said, as he continued to eat parts of Bernd over the period of weeks after the death, I'm not going to say murder, mm-hmm. although it was a murder, that he started to be able to speak English better. Armin started to speak English better because he was like eating Bernd, who had been a fluent English speaker. I don't necessarily believe that that's true, but it's interesting to perceive how Armin felt like some part of Bernd's personality or spirit had kind of passed to him and now resided in him, yeah. which is what he wanted.
Exactly what he wanted with that.
So the trial was interesting. Armin presented this very sort of calm, rational, very, very relaxed, smiling persona to the world. I was reading about in Germany, for something to be a murder, there have to be some specific aspects attached to it. One of them can be a sexual motivation. Killing somebody qualifies it as a murder. That's one of the many definitions of murder. And at the start of his trial, he was actually not charged with murder. He was charged with manslaughter. And he received 8.5 years in prison.
Yes, which he was not happy with.
He was certainly not happy with it. He's about to get a whole lot less happy
yeah.
because several years later, the prosecutors reopened the case and then charged him with the much more serious crime of murder. And they did this as a result of the tape. So this tape, this long ass tape, it was shown in court, and they showed about 90 minutes of it in court, of this very long, many hour long tape of the night of Bernd's death and all of the mutilation and pain and screaming that went along with it. When they showed it in court, there were several jurors who actually needed to get PTSD therapy.
I would think
so. They had been made to see this man getting his penis cut off and then getting his throat cut and dying. And then from there was also all of the hanging up. yeah. of Byrne's body and the cutting up of it that happened, that was also filmed and they were also shown that. He made the case that by making this movie, it implied a sexual element because he would want to watch the movie later and relive it.
Yes.
And get sexual enjoyment from it. And so just the existence of the tape alone, in a way, convicted him. At that point, he was found guilty of murder. In the second prosecution that happened, a sentence went from 8.5 years in prison to a life sentence.
Yes, a full life sentence. Yeah, it was quite a jump in terms of sentencing because this all happened, I think, by the time his initial case was all said and done. It was around 2004. Had he served his eight and a half years, I mean, he would have been out mid-2012. And now he's in there for life. Although, apparently, he does get to go outside of the prison. He's well known in the prison system as being extremely polite, very well behaved, kind of like what you would expect him to be like, I guess, just from knowing what we know about him and like interviews with him. And he's extremely soft-spoken,
gentle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's almost like, I don't want to say monotone, but he's just like almost nice to listen to in a way. And when he talks about the case and specifically what happened, I watched an interview, it was 60 Minutes Australia, actually. He did an interview with them, and it was the way he spoke about the case, there was a depth to him. You know, he wasn't just going into it to be gory or to, you know, glorify what he did. It meant something to him.
It was a very important thing, almost like a sacred thing that happened and that he had been waiting for his whole life, and now he had achieved it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why I said in the beginning of this, like, I don't necessarily dislike the man. I think I don't understand what he did.
No. There's no understanding.
But I don't necessarily like dislike him in the sense of like he was a horrible monster who was out snatching children off the street and you could justify hating him. I mean, it's hard, like you said, it's like you can't really call it a murder if it was consensual.
There's been a lot of back and forth in sort of legal circles about what is consent and how do you define it, and at what point does the state have an interest in your well-being as a productive member of society to have you not be killed? Does the state have a right to say what happens to you, or is it all yours? And there's a lot of legal ifs, buts, and maybes about it. And my personal opinion is it's very hard to establish consent if there is a clear mental disorder. Mm-hmm. And in legal terminology and legal definitions, if you have a psychiatric, psychological, mental disorder that sort of affects your thinking, then that sort of disqualifies consent because a person who is not thinking clearly cannot give consent.
Right.
But if you look at, and people could say, anyone who wants to have their dick bitten off clearly is not in their right mind. Okay, that's the argument.
Yeah.
That he couldn't have been in his right mind because he wanted this to happen. But it's his dick. It's his life.
Right.
It's his body.
And this was something that manifested over a long period of time for him.
Right. Exactly. This is a lifelong thing for him. And he there was nothing whimsical about this. He planned it to the point where, you know, he ended his life. He ended his financial life. He ended his, you know, emotional life. He was ready for this to happen. This is what he wanted. And Armin was justified it in his own mind so clearly that he was doing this almost as a mercy to this so deeply that it was almost merciful to sort of almost put him out of his misery of wanting this so much.
Exactly. And I would say too that because it was documented in writing, that I don't see how there could be an argument that it wasn't consensual. And also, cannibalism is not technically illegal, or at least at the time when this happened in Germany, it was not illegal. Mm-hmm. So it just fell into the consensual crime category. That's where it starts to get into like a really gray area. And that is initially why they had brought him up on the manslaughter charges. Yeah, I mean, I think it's crazy that they went back and actually dug this case up and they were like, no, 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 this isn't going to work. This isn't enough.
Yeah, we got to go in for murder.
Because he was back. The thing is, that doesn't bode well for him is that he was back on that website and he had looked for another potential willing person to engage in this. Because I think that if he had not been caught up with, that he probably would have continued to escalate. And even though maybe his intention wasn't at first to necessarily snatch somebody off the street, it could have grown into that.
If he had not been caught, this could have gone on for a very long time.
The town that he lived in was very small. And so, you know, he's hunting way outside of the town. He's not hunting the local guy at the tool shop. You know, he's like hunting, you know, in Berlin. I've never been to Berlin, but I'm sure that it would be a lot easier to disappear in Berlin than in a small town in Germany. And with that said, I guess, you know, they have a pretty active gay scene out there, and it's not unusual for gay men to go missing. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's a thing, you know. And so because he was part of that community, who knows where it would have ended up, but it didn't go further than this one particular victim slash not victim.
You know, I'm just kind of struggling how to describe this one.
I found this really interesting blog that really outlines a lot about cannibalism, specifically like sexual cannibalism. It's called Dr. Mark Griffith's WordPress.com. I'm not exactly sure how qualified Dr. Mark Griffiths is. Everything that was listed on here, I was like, oh my God, this is what I was talking about when I would go down these rabbit holes of the things that were just so fascinating. And it was like, not necessarily even to this case, but just what sexual cannibalism is. And, you know, it's not something that's unheard of in the animal kingdom, but it's definitely more on the rare side in the human animal kingdom.
It really is.
Yeah.
But this idea of consuming somebody and making them a part of you, I mean, This has been a part of human history for a long time, this concept. Warriors would eat the parts of the bodies of their vanquished foes to take on their strength. You've got the people in Papua New Guinea, the Fori people, who when a member of the tribe died, they would consume the entire body to kind of like recycle, in a way, back into the strength of the tribe. That person who had died, their strength gets pushed back into the tribe and doesn't get lost. So this idea of keeping people with you and dominating, there's elements of domination as well that can enter the sexual aspect of cannibalism, that like taking somebody on, taking them over so completely that they are now a part of you. Fascinating stuff.
Quite fascinating.
Well, Armin Mivas was a man with a dream, a very specific dream. Brandis shared a similar fantasy, one that would fit Armin's perfectly, the yin to his yang. Armin wanted to eat a person. Bernd wanted to be eaten. This case took me on a deep dive into consent, about what we should and should not be allowed to do with our own lives, our own bodies, no matter how twisted our desires might seem to others. From one perspective, Armin Mivas lured, drugged, and killed a man to satisfy his cannibalistic fantasies. Another perspective tells us that Mivas fulfilled Brandis's ultimate fantasy, while at the same time fulfilling his own. His defense even framed it as a mercy killing, as Brandis wanted to die, and in this particular way. It's a story that horrifies and fascinates, naturally, I think, because of the gore factor of the penis excision and the resulting dismemberment, but more deeply because of the feeling that, just maybe, if this was a consensual act and nobody was hurt except for someone who wanted to be hurt, then perhaps this crime is less a crime and more a horrific agreement. Wherever you fall on the spectrum of consent and responsibility, one thing is certain. Armin Mivas fulfilled a lifelong dream, and these memories apparently comfort him while he's imprisoned. He exudes the contentment and satisfaction of a person who has caught his own personal Moby Dick. After his arrest, he told a psychologist, "I have achieved my life's ambition. I am happy. And what comes next is not important." Mivas estimated at the time of his arrest that there were around 800 cannibals living in Germany. You've been listening to Homicide Worldwide.
Did you know that Marvis? Why did I call him Marvis?
Starvin' Marvin.
Oh my God. Did you know that Armin has now become a vegetarian in prison?
Oh, I love that.
Fun fact.
The circle is now complete.
Right. He's like, I got my fix and I don't want it anymore.
Good. Yeah. That shriveled penis really turned me off of me.
I can't imagine how. Yeah. I can't imagine ever wanting a piece of meat again after something like that.